Welcome, everyone. It's 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern on December 18th, 2014. And I'm delighted that you have chosen to join us here for the World Peace Diet Circle teleconference call that we have on the third Thursday of every month. I think this is number 45 or something, so we're getting close to 4 years of this, and it's definitely a bright spot for me every month. I want to thank all of you for taking your relationship to animals and to each other and to the earth seriously enough to take time out of your busy schedules to be here this evening. And we'll go ahead and just get started here. And I thought, you know, this is really close, a couple of days away from the solstice, which cultures from all times have regarded as a special, somewhat sacred time. And I just got a nice email just a little while ago from our World Peace Diet facilitators and who are in Oregon, Beth and Daniel Redwood. They're going to be having a vegan gathering at their house on the solstice, I believe. And Daniel wrote an invocation or prayer for that event, and they sent it to me. I thought I would just maybe read it. It's not too long. I think it kind of gathers the spirit very nicely. So, as you know, usually at the beginning of a call, we like to have a moment to just turn our attention within. And this is Solstice by Daniel Redwood. As the forces of night reach the peak of their power, we give thanks for the light that dwells in our hearts. As midnight approaches, our faith that morning is coming sustains us, calls us, reaches across time to remind us that our lives, however brief, possess value beyond measure when we pursue the highest of callings to relieve suffering, seek justice, and honor the love we came here to fulfill. On this longest night of the year, we gather together, break bread, and share that most precious of jewels, friendship. As we partake of a meal for which no animal, no sacred innocent being was required to suffer or die, for our sustenance or sensory pleasure, we envision the day we know will come, whether or not any of us in these bodies lives to see it, when all beings stand equal in the sunlight of creation, and in the words of the poet, love is all there is. Together tonight, we lift our hearts in prayer that our actions will hasten the day when the long-awaited springtime of humanity brings justice, not only for all people, but for our fellow inhabitants on this blessed, vibrant sphere. May all beings be free from suffering and all its causes. May the earth be blessed with a new era of healing, and may our spirits grow strong with the lengthening days that now begin. Thank you very much, Daniel Redwood and Beth, for the tremendous work that you've been doing for many years on behalf of animals. And let's just continue for one moment longer in kind of with our attention turned within, with those beautiful thoughts and feelings that we just heard that were penned by Daniel, and this feeling that life is precious, that our lives have value beyond measure to the degree that we are living our lives in order to reach a higher calling, in order to awaken to the truth that we are and to bless others. This is an enormous opportunity to have a human birth. We give thanks for this opportunity, this short time we're here on this beautiful planet. And for each other, for everyone in this circle, for our loved ones, for everyone who is working to help cleanse and heal our relationship with non-human animals, with each other, with ecosystems, with those who are less privileged than we are. We give thanks knowing that we are a part of an awakening that is happening on this planet, and dedicate our lives to unfolding the highest potential that we have within ourselves, that we may be more effective in our lives and bringing healing and peace, joy, love, equality, stability to our Earth. The times are indeed ripe for major shifts in our world, and I can think of no greater way to bring positive shifts to our society, to humanity, than to make an effort to understand and live the teachings that go by the name of veganism, of ahimsa, of the World Peace Diet, of understanding the underlying driving indoctrination and delusion that our culture propagates, and to heal that within ourselves on every level. An easy thing to do. So I just thank all of you and all of us for taking this path. It's not an easy path to take in our society today. And I think it can really bring out the best in us. So much love to you all, and thanks for joining us. All right, so this is a busy time of year. We have all kinds of things. People have obligations because of the holidays. And I'm aware that in some ways it's one of the hardest times of the year for vegans, because in many ways, wherever we turn, we see even more evidence of violence, of consumerism, and abuse of animals and ecosystems, and sort of the non-thinking way that we humans very often live on this earth. I think one of the things I want to mention, briefly here in the beginning, is this idea of entitlement. I think that's one of the key toxins in our in the official stories of our society. They tend to, without directly saying it, but the underlying idea is that we human beings are entitled, and certain of us are more entitled than others, to use animals, to use the earth, that we have this God-given, or nature-given, or evolutionarily given superiority. And we are the ones that matter, and others don't matter. So I think the more we can begin to question this on every level within ourselves first, and live our lives more and more in that way, I think we'll become more, not only better vegans in our living a vegan life, but also I think more congruent in when we're speaking about these things, talking to them, talking to others about these ideas. And so, just I think always for myself anyway, I'm always trying to be aware of how this idea of entitlement sort of sneaks its way into my thinking, if it does, and to question it within my own mind. I really love the spiritual traditions of the world in general. I spend especially a lot of time studying the Buddhist tradition and the idea of mindfulness or awareness, of meditation, of making an effort to become more conscious. And I really think that in many ways the most important thing we can do is to increase our awareness of the ramifications of our actions and of our thoughts and of our words, and to, again, bring them into alignment with the truth that we are. We can make efforts to do that on the outer level. I think that is very important. However, I also feel that the more we can do inner work where we actually begin to wake up and understand intuitively and directly that we are part of a symphony of life, that we are interconnected with all human beings, with all non-human beings, with future generations and past generations, with a life that is far greater than the one little expression for a short amount of time through a particular physical body with a certain name that we tend to identify with, who has certain issues and problems and fears and regrets and health challenges and all those things, whatever they are, to realize that we are consciousness itself. And in many ways, we've been forced to contract our consciousness to a small identity and identify with that. And I think as we awaken out of that on an inner level, that it becomes more natural and spontaneous for us to live a life that reflects veganism in a way that is not artificial, or that we don't have to police it in a sense, try to, you know, struggle with cravings, or know what to say to people, or, you know, all these things. There's always going to be challenges, but I think I do want to talk about those things tonight. So I'll just start out here in the beginning by saying that we do have a relatively short time. I know it seems like a long time. We usually go for about an hour and a half. I don't like it to go longer than an hour and a half because that's really too long, I think, for a lot of people. Since we start at 6, which is 9 o'clock Eastern, and some people are even in other time zones beyond the United States. And we are on this call essentially to connect more deeply with the ideas and the World Peace Diet, the ideas of veganism, of vegan living, of ahimsa, of compassion for all life, of radical inclusion for all living beings, and to share our insights, our challenges, our concerns, to try to grow, to be more effective in our advocacy, and to really, unlock the secrets, if they are actually secrets, or the keys, maybe, to thriving as a vegan in a very, at this point, not yet vegan world. So I'll just say now at the beginning, if you would like to say something, press *6 on your phone, *6, and that'll make it obvious to me that you would like to say something, and then I can unmute your phone. Good. So let's do that. Let's just be aware of that. If there's anything that's going along, as we go along, you'd like to either ask a question or just want to say something, we're happy to do that. So since the last month we met, I have to say, I really feel this. I feel that every month we have a lot of progress that's being made, and in general in the movement. And there's a lot of evidence for that, I think, when we begin to just see how more and more people, even though, there's definitely a lot of horrible, I shouldn't say a lot of, there's just oceans of suffering that we're inflicting on animals. But nevertheless, it's great to see the positive changes that are happening. I just received a link the other day that Canadian people are really just cutting back a lot on the dairy products that they're eating because of more and more publicity to the abuse of dairy cows. And so instead of buying organic dairy or something like that, just cut it out. Stop buying that stuff. And I think that's beginning to be seen more and more, meat and dairy, fish, everything, for environmental reasons, for cruelty and abuse reasons, for health reasons. We see this message, again, growing in so many different ways. And I also wanted to, maybe I'll do this in the beginning, because I was asked by a couple of people if I could address a couple of issues on the call tonight. And I found in the past sometimes it's good to do it in the beginning, and because once we get started, who knows what's going to happen. So one person just wanted to ask me this, so I'll go ahead and answer this question. They're asking if I could go over the requirements for being a World Peace Diet facilitator and what's covered in the training. Basically, we have a 4-week training that's online training, which is the World Peace Diet Mastery Program, and then an 8-week training, which is the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training. And these are online trainings that are self-paced. You can go at your own pace, taking basically you through the main ideas in the book with audio lectures and so forth that attempt, anyway, to illuminate the ideas, and with also with guest lectures from various people, Q&A sessions that have been recorded, and then supplemental readings, as well as, of course, this Wealthy Diet Circle, the community forum, which also is available, as well as we also have a Facebook page, Wealthy Diet Facilitator Facebook page, so that people have an opportunity to interact with other people who are going through the training simultaneously. We've also done live trainings as well, and every year we would do one or two, quite a few years. This past year, let me think, 2014, did I do a live training? I think maybe this is the first year we didn't do a live training, but we did, for many years we did, you know, one or two or three or four, I think, in some cases, depending. But we do have the ongoing training online, and then, of course, for the facilitator training, there's a midterm and a final as well, so writing. And so if you go through all that, then you're certified as a Will Peace Diet facilitator. And the whole idea, really, it's not to necessarily do one specific thing. The idea is essentially to deepen your familiarity with the ideas, to hopefully also help you develop the ability to articulate these ideas so that you're more comfortable understanding them and speaking them effectively and living them more deeply, which I think is really the key to the whole thing. Also, we talk a lot about ways that we can really feel great about our life, to thrive as vegans in this world, which, you know, we're really still a very small minority, and very often we may feel cut off from friends, family, relatives, colleagues, the society in general. And so to understand this more deeply and to be able to get to the stage I refer to sometimes as deep veganism, where we're not only angry at what's happening. Oh, gosh, I've got something happening here. For a second. We're not only, you know, we're not getting angry. We're not being afraid to speak up about these ideas. We're not confused about things. You know, we get to the point, because I think what we realize, you know, when we look more, you know, I think most people go through certain stages, you know, very briefly. For some reason we go vegan. Usually before we go vegan, we go vegetarian. Typically, it doesn't have to be that way, but I would say that's probably 90% of the time we do that. We go vegetarian and then go vegan. And then usually it takes a while to understand how to be a healthy vegan. So, and then also to learn what the issues are and what to say to people, or what to say to ourselves when we think the thoughts that come up about, you know, where am I going to get my protein, and where am I going to get my calcium, and how am I going to, you know, get enough iron, and what am I going to say to people when they say that plants feel pain too, and, you know, all these things, you know, all kinds of social situations that come up with. There's so much to learn, really. And so as a result, a lot of people, I think, don't get, in a way, too far with being vegan. I mean, they maybe stay at a certain level, and then either, unfortunately, some do go back. I think a lot of people who say they're vegans for health reasons, it's more likely that they may revert to eating some kind of animal foods, because the pressure around them very often is the reason, from either from doctors or people close to them. But in any event, it's really helpful, I think, to try to create situations where we have vegan community. And I think this is what this Will Peace Diet whole movement is about. I mean, in a sense, it's to build community. So if people go through the Will Peace Diet Facilitator training, the idea is to help build vegan community somehow in your world. You know, we have people like Lily Macy, for example, who has started this telephone call once a week, which is really a community. It's a weekly community where people can feel their connection and sympathy and rapport with other people who are also vegans, and really strive to understand the issues more deeply and to make a positive difference in the world. There's also people who go through the World Peace Facilitator training and do Whoopi's diet study groups. I think this is a wonderful thing, and you all know, I think, probably about what happened in Cincinnati with Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson and starting Whoopi's diet study groups that have been going on now for probably 9 years regularly. And, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people have gone through these. They've built really a nice vegan community in Cincinnati through doing that. So, you know, that's another option. You should just have a regular 6 or 8 or 10 week, however long you want to do it, study, just a book study group. And through a local library or church or yoga studio or at your house or whatever. Other people do things like maybe starting writing a blog or doing counseling, coaching, doing various forms of teaching and writing, music. There's all kinds of ways that we can bring this message to our world and to help create vegan community. I would actually love to see more vegan community. So that is, this person was asking about the World Peace Diet Facilitator training, what's covered in the training, and then their second question was actually about community. So I'm kind of leading into that question, actually. the second question is, she would like to know my viewpoint on a place called Gentle World, which is a vegan community on the Big Island of Hawaii. I have very high regard for Gentle World. I think they're really fantastic, actually. And I'm very impressed with Gentle World. Gentle World started by a couple, quite a few years ago in Florida, and then they eventually moved and into Hawaii. And they're about, I guess, half the year they're in Hawaii, half the year they're on the North Island of New Zealand. And it's a totally vegan community. It's one of the only vegan communities. It's also, I would say, spiritually oriented, although there's no set spirituality, actually. It's just, I think everybody there meditates and does yoga and, generally speaking, is spiritually oriented in their lives. And there's just wonderful people. We have visited their community on the Big Island of Hawaii, and we have also visited their community in New Zealand. We were just there a while back, and I'm just very impressed with them. They're great people. They're very humble and loving. They know a lot about veganism. They write. They have a website. They're teaching vegan principles. They're very committed. A lot of them are longtime vegans, over 30, 35 years, 40 years. I mean, really longtime vegans. And veganism is like their religion, in a sense, I would say. And some people don't like it to say that veganism is a religion. I wrote an article about that a while back. And I do think, in a sense, if you just look at it from the point of view of the core teaching of all the world religions is compassion for others and understanding the interconnectedness of all life. I think that's really in the idea of karma as well, or as you sow, so shall you reap. I mean, these are the core teachings of veganism. And so in that sense, I think it is a valid spiritual path that will definitely bring us out of our delusion and selfishness and greed and hypocrisy and all that stuff, which is what a valid spiritual path is supposed to do, and make us better people, make us more aware, conscious, loving, free, creative, all those things. So veganism, to me, will actually, if we are really engaging with veganism authentically, it's going to do that. It has to. I mean, if we really care about animals, and we really sincerely would like to somehow bring this message to the world to help these animals, then we're going to have to draw on untapped inner resources, and that's going to make us better people. It's going to take away the limitations and blinders that maybe we've put on ourselves or that have been put on us for a long time. You know, the word compassion, it's very important to remember this, the word compassion is not merely, like most people think, I believe, this feeling in our hearts that we want to relieve, that we want others not to suffer, right? You know, we think of compassion as, you know, we see someone suffering or we see an animal suffering, and someone, humans and animals are all someone, And compassion is this sense of oh gosh, you know, I don't want that to happen. But that is that's not the only thing. I mean, compassion is not just feeling for the suffering of another. It is the lived, passionate feeling also to do something to relieve the suffering. Without that, it's not compassion. It's something else. It's maybe pity, or it's maybe empathy. But compassion includes the yearning. You know, yearning is a force. So the yearning force to act, to reduce or to relieve or to ameliorate the suffering that we see in others. And so when we live in a society like we do, where there's this ridiculous situation going on, where there's only, you know, 1 or 2% of the people that actually are aware of this massive ocean of suffering that is so obvious, but then 98% of the people seem to be basically oblivious to it and actually contributing to it all the time, every day, day in and day out, it's profoundly challenging. How do we respond to this situation with intelligence, with integrity, with honesty, with courage, with skillfulness, with loving kindness and caring and be effective? So, you know, that is it's an enormous challenge. And so what I've seen in the vegan movement is all kinds of conflicts among vegans about how to be effective advocates, which is really tragic in a sense that there are these conflicts, but it's to be to be expected. And, you know, from my point of view, what the vegan movement is missing really is a more deep spiritual or psychological or emotional maturing process, a recognition that is essentially what veganism is all about, is an inner transformation. And not to just stop at the behavior, you know, giving up eating meat, dairy products, and eggs, and wool, silk, and leather, and products tested on animals, and everything else. That's great. I mean, that is really great. But that's just the first step. I'm sure a lot of you have heard me say that. So what I love about Gentle World is that these people, I think, really understand this, and it's a long time community. This community has been going on for, probably 35 years. And there's still pretty much the same core people. It's not a large community. There's probably, I would say about 12 maybe core people that are there. And then, others that probably have come and gone. But I think if anyone's interested, you know, because people ask me about that sometimes, and I think it's a great thing. I mean, I went vegan because I saw, I lived for, it wasn't very long, it was only about maybe two or three weeks at the farm in Tennessee, which at that point was a vegan community. So that was it. Being in that community, that was it. I never ate meat again in my life since being in that community. And I have to say also, when I was a Zen monk in Korea at Sungwangsa, being in a community that had been vegan for many centuries was also enormously empowering for me. I wish we had more actual communities. It's very difficult, in a sense, in modern Western capitalist United States or Europe also, to create communities that are self-sustaining, you know, communes or communities or whatever you want to call them. So my hat is off, really, in many ways, to the people of Gentle World for keeping this going for so long, to live cooperatively and have veganism as the core sort of base of the whole raison d'etre of the community. It is really fantastic. And they asked me when I saw them, you know, when I was there with them, is there any other community, since I've traveled so much and I've been to so many communities, comparable to Gentle World? And I have to say there isn't any. There's no other community that I know of that's comparable to Gentle World in terms of a community where you can just go and live in a vegan community. Just move in and it's all vegan and they own the land and you can live there. And so it's great. I mean, it's a farm in Tennessee. It's definitely open to people moving there. They actually would love to have some people move in there, but it's not a vegan community, but it's But it's a lot of vegans there, though. So it's actually, to me, a very interesting place. There's a lot of vegans there, but it's not required. Whereas the general world, it is definitely required. Although there are, I have to say, there are other communities as well that are monastic. You know, there's Buddhist communities, for example, and I'm sure there's maybe that are vegan. Right here in Ukiah, California, not far from where we live, there's a city of 10,000 Buddhas, which is a Buddhist meditation community, and it's vegan. You have to shave your head and be a monk or a nun to live there. So that's a major lifestyle change. Like Sanglong Sa, you know, where I lived in Korea, is also a vegan community. But anyway, the whole idea is that it would be great, I think, to have more actual physical communities that are vegan. But in the meantime, we can create temporary or virtual communities like weekly phone calls, or like we have here on the World Peace Diet Circle, I think it's a community that we have. It's a sort of a virtual community. We have in geographical locations, we have veg groups and so forth that meet every month. That's a community, vegan community as well. So the more we can do this, the better. I think that's really an important thing. And so I would suggest, if you're interested in general world, you know, just write to them and tell them you're interested. That's what this woman asked me, and so that's the answer to that question. And there is also IC, letter IC, it stands for intentionalcommunity.org, IC.org. If you are, anyone is interested, or if you know people who are interested in intentional communities that are vegan, just go to IC.org. And there's a list, it's a huge list of intentional communities all over the world, including the United States, you know, North America, Europe, everywhere. And you can look through, they'll tell you each community what they eat. And there are some that are vegan, but they're not many. I mean, maybe there's more now. I haven't looked for a while, but most of them are somewhat urban-based. There's a lot of urban intentional communities. So land-based vegan communities are kind of rare. There's a few small ones. We were one in Arizona. There's probably only about, you know, four people. So, but anyway, if anyone has any input on that, let me know. I think it's an important thing. So, another question that came up, and this has come up before, but I would like to address this also in the time that we have here, is something, and if any of you have any thoughts on this, please feel free to press *6 and chime in about this. So this is a basic question. I think a lot of you go through this. She says basically that she goes to a lot of gatherings, workshops, and parties where everyone defines themselves as love and light, you know, like New Age kind of people, spiritual people, and yet they're eating animal foods. And so when she goes to these places and she tries to talk to the people there about extending love, this love that they have to all beings, including animals, and not eat them, then she feels accused, you know, and judged. And people say, they judge her for being too judgmental, I guess. And, you know, they react and they don't like it. She feels, she doesn't know how to say anything in these situations that's effective, because people, you know, are very resistant to hear about the suffering of animals. They say that you're just being negative, or that they're too sensitive to hear about things like raping and stabbing and those kinds of things. So don't talk about it. We don't want to hear that. And I think, you know, it's interesting. But first of all, it's interesting. Madeline and I moved in a couple of years ago to a little community here in Northern California after being on the road for 17 years full time. And we noticed when we got here, it's a community that has a golf course. Unfortunately, they have this golf course. It's really terrible. I didn't think it would be, but I've realized it really is a huge disaster to have this golf course. We have to pay, you know, this yearly assessment dues, they're called, and most, really a huge amount of it goes to the golf course, and only 5% of the people use the golf course. The other 95%, you know, I guess it was started like 40 years ago as a golfing community, and And so people moved in to golf here, but the whole economy of the area has completely changed, and now everybody that lives here is young people with families and working, and it's just a wide variety of people, and hardly anybody golfs. Nobody has time or they're not interested, but we still are paying millions of dollars, a year, a couple of million dollars a year for this ridiculous golf course. And so, but what's interesting is that when the board of directors is run by the golfing clique, and it has been for a long time, and so there's this whole move here to try to take back the control so we can have a more equitable distribution of resources. So this idea of entitlement I was talking about. The interesting thing is the golfers feel like they are entitled. This is a golfing community where, if you guys have to pay for the golfing, that's okay because it's a golfing community. Even though you don't golf, you have to pay. Because we golf, but you should pay for our golf. That's basically what people think. But what they always say is if anyone questions this, and we hear this, there's all kinds of, because you can imagine Facebook, things going on. The main thing that they accuse anyone who questions spending most of our money on the golf course, they say you're being negative. You should just go along, be positive. This is the way it is here. Don't stop being negative. And I realize when I look at this that this is something that human beings have said for a long time, right? People who are entitled, people who have power, people who are exploiting others, basically. When those who are being exploited say something, one of the standard things is, well, don't be negative, don't complain or something like that. And so I think it's very important for us to realize this is just a tactic that's been used for a long time. Men said it about women, when they wanted to vote, come on, don't be so negative. It's a good life you have. What are you talking about? And corporations have said that a lot about workers when they try to organize for decent work and unionize and so forth, that they shouldn't be negative. And, this is it. My basic feeling, in these kinds of questions is that, first of all, we have to use our intuition. There is no one-size-fits-all response that's just going to sort of do the trick in a particular situation. I think the most important thing, though, is to gauge the situation using our intuition and use, as I've said before, I statements, really talk about myself. I discovered this, whatever it is. I used to fine to eat meat and dairy, and now I realize how hideous the suffering that these poor animals go through. It's really amazing. And just talk about yourself. Gosh, I don't know. And I'm so glad that I finally was able to realize and make a change here. And then when people react, however they react or respond, I think it's helpful. Again, you have to trust your intuition, but I think in general it's helpful to keep a smile on your face. Be careful to be too quick to fight back and do the best you can to keep a smile and say, yeah, I know what you mean. I used to think the same thing. I definitely can relate to that. And then make a statement to plant a seed if you can. One of the things that's great also is to, if possible, to host events where there's either a film or a video or something where people can just see this from a third party, or give them the Living in Harmony with All Life CD that we have out. I think is, it's a great thing just to give to people because you don't have to say anything. Say, I found that it was really helpful just to listen to this CD, and you may want to just have a listen sometime. Give it to them, and then just. They're all by themselves in the car. They're listening to it. You're not there. They don't have to keep up their defenses and not be, people hate to be wrong. As soon as they know you're a vegan, they're wrong. They feel like they're wrong. You're making them wrong. They're already very defensive. So, they're spiritual people in their eyes. So if you come along and you're a vegan and you're spiritual, whatever, there's this underlying sense of defensiveness. You've kind of caught them, and they don't like it. And so there's a sense of hostility, typically, that can be there. Under, they may not even be aware of that, or a sense of being threatened or challenged. And so what we want to do is plant the seeds as best we can in a loving way that doesn't bring up the huge fences or defenses. And when we can do it with a smile or with humor or whatever, that typically, I think, helps. But the other thing, too, is that even if the person does react, and I've said this before, too, but I'm going to repeat it, and seems to close down or not like what you said or whatever, don't worry too much. I mean, I think, you know, if the most important thing is to do something. And if it seems like they didn't like it, instead of going, oh, man, I really blew it, I would not apologize too much. I mean, you know, this is something, when people were advocating for the end of slavery and they were talking to slave owners about it, and the slave owners got their feelings hurt about it, they didn't say, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't want to hurt your feelings. I mean, they were talking about raping, killing, maiming, stabbing. You know, we're talking about major violence that's caused when people take off their wallets and pay for meat, dairy products, and eggs. I don't think we have anything to apologize about. If we bring this to their attention, we're giving them a great gift, and we're doing it with their, you know, for their welfare and for the welfare of the animals, and really for all beings. And that's our motivation. So we have nothing to apologize about, and I think it's, you know, we can do it perhaps, you know, in a better way than others. But it's really hard to know if it's better or not. I think ultimately the only way to become truly, you know, I mean, I guess what I'm going to say here is we become more effective at this the more we're living it, you know. So ultimately, when we can really live this at a deep level, I think we'll find that our presence will tend to resonate with people, and they'll be more open to the ideas without us having to argue with them too much or convince them. I think convincing people usually, with statistics or so forth, I mean, sometimes that comes in handy, but for the most part, it's our presence and just planting the seed as best we can in a situation with some kind of sense of connecting with the people. And the other thing is, it's not so much what we say. I mean, a lot of times people say, what should I say? What should I say? What should I say? It's really, in a way, it's more, how should I say? How? How we say things in many ways is much more powerful than what we actually say. I can say something that may be the perfect thing to say, it would seem like, but if I say it in a way where I've got my eyebrow raised, or I've got my lower lip jutting out, or I've got my eyes kind of scowling at them, then that's what they're going to get, you know, really. So I think it's very important to really monitor, be aware of our body language, how we're feeling in our heart, if we're contracted, if we're angry, if we're upset with them, if we're fighting with them, if they're egging us on, and we're just taking the bait, because that happens. You know, people egg us on, we'll take the bait, kind of, and then we'll react, we'll say something, then they'll get mad at us, and then it'll create this whole big blow-up. And this one question, actually, somebody asked me, also to discuss, it was actually her relatives through marriage. It was about ice cream, and she was trying to say, you know, this is, this vegan ice cream is delicious, and the daughter-in-law was saying, well, you know, I prefer regular. She kept saying, I prefer regular. And in a way, it was kind of egging her on. And then finally she said, well, you know, would you like to know why I prefer vegan ice cream? And, of course, she didn't say, yes, please tell me. She said, well, I just prefer regular. So she said, well, I'm going to tell you anyway. So she told her, you know, because of this. And the cruelty to the mothers and the babies. And then, of course, the daughter-in-law got all upset and said, you know, she didn't like that. And it created this rift, you know, in their relationship that still hasn't healed. And so you can say, well, you know, what could I have done differently? What would have, you know, I didn't want to cause this rift in my relationship with my daughter-in-law, and now they're, you know, they've got two little babies. I'm the grandmother. I can't even see them anymore because they're, you know, this, they don't like us because we're vegans, and we question they're eating ice cream, and so there's this, you know, drama about this whole thing. And these are the kinds of things that we go through. We think, gosh, I'm being a vegan makes life so complicated, and I just wish I wasn't a vegan. I wouldn't have these problems. But don't never think that way. Now, the idea is that, you know, as we heard, we said the other day, I was on Lily's call, you know, the problem isn't, there's nothing hard being vegan. It's just the other people, you know. And so we have to realize that in these situations, we probably could have done something differently that would have made it less explosive, you know, if we had said, you know, something like, gosh, you know, I wouldn't want to have my kit, you know, stuck on one of these dang machines twice a day and they're sucking the milk out of it, you know, or something like that. You know, maybe you can both laugh about it or something. But, you know, just try to kind of think of, intuitively a way to keep the connection going, you know, especially with relatives are the hardest thing, right? Because these are people, you're not just acquaintances or colleagues or whatever. These are people you're kind of, you know, stuck with in a way because of birth and marriage and those kinds of things. But I think it's important to take a bigger view. And, you know, I remember I at one point I had quite a big falling out with my sister over this, you know, it's kind of a similar thing. But I kept, you know, I'm not saying it's right to do this, but I kept on her, actually, even though she was like bugged and she didn't want to hear it anymore and stop it, I don't want to hear it. She just didn't want to hear it. But I actually kept sending her links to videos and sending her pictures and this and that and in a loving way, but I just wanted her to know this is really important. And eventually she went vegan, you know, and we're going to have a great relationship again, you know. So you never know. I mean, you might think it looks bleak for a while, but it's always good to take the bigger view and realize that there's more to life than just getting along with people. You know, Madeline and I right now are reading a book that I don't necessarily recommend because it's, in a way it's very challenging, but it's called 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. And Milarepa was a famous yogi in Tibet who basically just left at the world, and he lived in caves in Tibet and meditated constantly, and he attained a very high degree of enlightenment. But anyway, I thought it was interesting because just yesterday we read this song. It's called The Shepherd's Search for Mind, and you know, I thought it spoke to this because if we have trouble with relatives, you know, sons, daughters, fathers-in-law, so forth. And this, he, you know, Milarepa goes to this village, and these people want to take him in as their son, this couple who never had any children. And so it was kind of interesting because he says it pretty strongly, but anyway, I just thought it's an interesting perspective to bear in mind. The husband says, but, you know, dear Lama, isn't it true that when you get old and, you know, you would just, wouldn't it be great to have a son? Don't you need to have a son? Wouldn't you like to have a son? You know, wouldn't that be great to have a son? And then Milarepa, he sings. Milarepa's always singing, so he sings a song. He says, in youth, a son is like the prince of heaven. You love him so much that the passion is hard to bear. In middle age, he becomes a ruthless creditor to whom you give all, but he still wants more. Driven from the house are his own parents. Invited in is his beloved, charming lady. His father calls, but he will not answer. His mother cries out, but he will not listen. Then the neighbors take advantage, spreading lies and rumors. Thus I learned that one's child oft becomes one's enemy. Bearing this in mind, I renounce the fetters of samsara. For sons and nephews, I have no appetite. And then they ask about a daughter. You know, he says something about a daughter. Then they ask about the relatives, and he says, relative, he says, at first, when a man greets his relatives, he is happy and joyful. With enthusiasm, he serves, entertains, and talks to them. Later, they share his meat and wine. He offers something to them. Once, they may reciprocate. In the end, they cause anger, craving, and bitterness. They are a fountain of regret and unhappiness. With this in mind, I renounce pleasant and sociable friends. For kinsmen and neighbors, I have no appetite. So, you know, this is, again, it's an extreme position, but basically what he's saying is, I think that it's good to bear in mind that, you know, these relationships are with people who we really cannot control. And all we can control is ourselves, our own mind, our own thoughts, our feelings, and our lives. And so we may, you know, just by being ourselves, we may cause our neighbors, our friends, our relatives, our sons and daughters, you know, whoever, to not like us, you know, or to put up a wall or who knows what. And then to be miserable, and you know, oh gosh, you know, that is really the most important thing. What Moipa is saying is to focus on your own mind, to cultivate your own mind, to cultivate your own connection with the infinite love that is your true nature. And that as we do that, we will find that our relationships naturally do become more harmonious. And we naturally, instead of just seeing the person at the lower level, like, oh, he's just a lying, cheating person, you see beyond that and see the true, beautiful being there, and always hold that, you know, hold that in mind. Like if I have a daughter-in-law, son-in-law, or a, whatever it is, a cousin or a colleague who did something, and they won't speak to me, or they're angry at me or something, if I always hold that in my mind that, you know, that they're angry with me and they won't speak to me, or that they're being stubborn, or they're unpleasant, then I'm reinforcing that always, you know, and then kind of keeping them in that mold. So to really not do that, to consciously see them, that person, like in the Buddhist tradition, you know, as their essential Buddha nature, or in the Christian terms, the inner Christ nature, or whatever, you know, the beautiful person that we all are deep down underneath the conditioning, we will tend to draw that out of them, and that will make our relationships with them more harmonious naturally. And we can just do that. We don't have to ever see them. You know, there's lots of cases where this happens. People have a fight, they don't get along, and then instead of, you know, you can just kind of hold this person in your love and in awareness, and I think in many ways telepathically, or in some way at a deeper level, harmony is restored. And it really has to start from ourselves. We have to start with ourselves, have harmony with ourselves. If we are really at a deep level, if we are at deep inner peace with ourselves, then we are at peace with the world. That is the unending, unmistakable law. If we can truly do that, and it's not easy, but I think that is, in a sense, the goal of ripening and awakening, is to connect at a deeper level with the being that we are, that has loving kindness and fearlessness and awareness of the beauty of all living beings, no matter what happens in the outer world. And I think that the more we move in that direction, the more effective we'll be as advocates. So anyway, that's my answer to that question. When we meet people who seem to be, living spiritual lives, but don't actually want to hear about the vegan thing, I think this is something to always emphasize. And then my final thing I'll say, and there's a few people that have their press star 6 here, so I'm going to stop, but I do want to address these two questions. That is this saying that you've probably heard me say this maybe, but I'm going to say it again, from the Buddhist teaching, that when one's view becomes as vast as the sky, one's carefulness about one's behavior becomes as fine as flour. And I just love this, because that, I think, if we can just maybe bring that idea to people too, who think that they're, you know, they have this feeling that they're very enlightened, you know, they have this vast view. You know, they see their view, they're very enlightened, they see the oneness of all life and so forth. And just to say, you know, I there's a saying from the Buddhist tradition that when our view becomes vast and broad, then it's not, because people think that when that happens, oh, then, you know, you can just kind of do whatever you want. And it's true. We can, in a sense, do whatever we want if we're really, really there. I mean, you know, really see the one life in all, and we won't hurt any others because we are them. But very few people have attained that, actually. And so in the meantime, we become very, very aware of not harming others unnecessarily, not taking advantage of them, not manipulating them, not lying to them, certainly not taking out our wallets and paying for people to stab them and rape them and all these other things. So that I think is crucially important, that our level of spiritual awareness can never go higher than our actions, than our behavior, that our behavior really is critically important. We are limited in a sense by the level of our behavior. So, you know, that's why I think if people are eating animal foods, there's a certain ceiling to the level at which they will be able to really experience the highest levels of spiritual awareness. But I think by bringing our behavior more and more deeply, going vegan is just a very small hem of the outer garment. After we go, it's important, it's essential, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient, right? I mean, we need to do a lot more work than that, but it's a very important fundamental step, and then from there we can move to far greater, more expansive levels of understanding. So anyway, that's all I want to say there. There's a couple of people there with, I'm going to unmute here. This is phone number 339-823-54971. Not sure who that is exactly. You're unmuted.
Hi. Hello?
Hi. Hello.
Hi,
yes, I can hear you.
Hi, it's Veronique from France. Hi. Good morning.
This is, oh Veronique from France.
Good morning.
All right. Yes, hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's middle of the morning for you, and it's late at night. I mean,
yeah,
it's the middle of the evening for us. Okay, well, thanks for calling.
I'm trying
not
to speak too loud. There were so many things in what you said that I was resonating with and experienced as well. And I don't know where to start. You were talking about intentional communities, and I actually had an experience like this back in 2003 for tons of reasons I'm not going to go into. I ended up in New Mexico at the time,
uh-huh.
And in some kind of a eco place where we're actually building eco buildings, and with straw and adobe and carpentry, and creating a sort of an area built with eco-friendly material. And so I learned some carpentry, and I learned, you know, to do some construction work for an entire summer under 120 degrees. And that was very interesting, because they were vegetarians in the group. I wasn't a vegan myself at that point at all, but there were some vegetarians, and they were very liberal and very political. And at that point, I was very, I went into this community with the mindset of what I would call conservative, and that was around the time, you know, when George Bush decided to go to war, and I sort of fell into that trap myself and sort of cheered it up, believing it was, you know, believing the propaganda at the time, and meeting those people sort of turned me 180 degrees politically into a very strong liberal and very strongly more open person, I think. And what happened at the end of the summer, after meeting those people, so, like I said, some of them were vegetarians from San Francisco, were very, very political as well, very much activist. And I ended up going to, because I didn't know where to go, and I ended up finding, through the intentional communities catalog at the time, because I don't think it was online yet, but it was they had a big, huge catalog.
Yeah, they had a big catalog, right, yeah.
Right. And I ended up finding a community in North Carolina. And I took a Greyhound bus all the way to North Carolina, to Asheville. And I ended up in a community called New Haven, if I remember correctly, which was an intentional community. And actually having one of the worst experiences of my life, because I ended up being with raw meat eaters.
Raw meat eaters? Really? Interesting.
Yeah, raw meat eaters. They were raising their own chickens in a very... I guess, you know, not non-factory farm style, old-fashioned
right.
or McDonald's style, and they were eating raw meat all the time. And at the time, I wasn't a vegan, so it didn't bother me, you know. It was not offended. It wasn't. I was not there yet. But it did sort of, you know, I found it disgusting anyway. And I ended up spending 2 weeks in a building and being constructing in freezing winter with no heat. And when I was given the choice to go to that community, it was a sort of a work trade. And I said, if you do some work, you can stay with us, et cetera, et cetera. And they also had an option to do, you know, herbal workshops and work with the herbalists. And
right.
it turned out that they were all vegans. So it was a very weird community, because on one side you had those people who were doing this raw meat kind of stuff, and then on the other side you had all those vegans, which at the time thought they were strange people, because I was eating eggs all the time, because I didn't know what else to cook when I was there. And they were those vegans who were, you know, carefully separating their pans from the meat eaters so they wouldn't be contaminated by the meat eating pans, and which was very strange to me at the time. But that was really my very first introduction to actual vegans in my life.
Right, and so that probably planted a few seeds for you, though, I would imagine, because you actually
I think it was meant to be. I always thought, you know, now looking back, I mean, if I had a choice now, I would go with the vegans, obviously, not with the raw meat eaters. But at the time, I didn't know any better, and I just ended up picking up the kind of job that I had done before, which was carpentry, and getting there. I said, okay, we're going to put you with carpenters, you know. And it was just horrible, because I was, first of all, I was freezing. I had, like, two backpacks just to keep me warm. I was sleeping all dressed up, and it was just really, really bad. But I was, at the same time, I had this experience of a community who was getting along very well, and they were all building their own eco-houses. And there was this weird mix between vegans and people doing other things, and it was very strange. But that was a very strong, very powerful experience for me, but also very, very difficult. I remember being so fed up with it that I ended up taking the Greyhound on Christmas Day and going back to New Mexico to the people I had left and stayed with them for a little while before I went back to California and got my job back there. So that was my 1 year of doing weird experiences, new, very different experiences in my life with intentional community. But that brings me to what you said next, which is that, you know, we badly need communities. And what I found here in France so far is actually a wonderful community of a very small group, but a wonderful community of activists. Not all of them are vegans, because it's so much harder here, and the word vegan is still very much unknown. If you tell people I'm a vegan, they usually look at you like with big eyes. What the hell is that? Mm-hmm. If you say vegetarian with the L, they understand what it means, that it's more, but this is more like a diet. But if you tell them, yeah, I'm a vegetarian, which means you eat a plant-based diet, they get it a little bit better. But vegan is sort of a word that is still very difficult to put in people's mouths here, and they don't understand what it means. So, I mean, I take it as an opportunity, obviously, to educate. And I'm very, you were talking about not apologizing, and I don't. I really don't. I'm a very proud vegan, not to make it sound egotistical, obviously, but I'm a very proud vegan now, and I really own my truth, to use a line from Colin Patrick Goodrow, and I take any opportunity to educate people every time I do any kind of a stand. We do a lot of stands where we have, you know, anti-foie gras or anti-meat or anti-hunting or anti-whatever, you know. And we always use this opportunity to educate people about, you know, not eating animals if possible, at least, and if possible, not eating the secretions as well. And we're very much not welfarists, because we really want an abolition of whatever it is we're doing to stand for. So if it's an anti-foie gras, we want to abolish foie gras. We don't want to make it better, you know, slightly better. because there's no such thing. We want to add it. If we are talking about hunting, we want to add it. If we were talking about not eating meat, we really want people not to eat meat. And so what is extraordinary to me is that, yes, not everybody is there, but there's a first. This is the one thing that really struck me when I got back home, is that the people are thirsty for knowing about it. There's so many people who have asked me to explain to them, to actually be coached by me. And I found so many more opportunities here to actually do my job than I ever did in the U.S. because that's, you know, everybody knows what it is now. And I have people asking me to coach them. I want to be a vegetarian. I want to be a vegan. I just have a hard time. It's difficult because I don't have either, you know, I become anemic or I don't have any support or, you know, all sorts of reasons. And I'm like, well, I'm there. I can help you. I've done it and done it for 9 years now. And I got all those nice certifications from America, and which unfortunately don't mean anything here in France because I tried to get them to be recognized here, and unfortunately the French government doesn't recognize any of my credentials from Integrative Nutrition or the Tickling Campbell Foundation. And so I'm going to have to, it's very frustrating because I have to basically coach people secretly, not openly, legally, and pay taxes on it or anything like that. But it's when a law is unjust or when an ideology is unjust, you do it anyway, you know.
So I'm going to do it
anyway, no matter what.
Well, that's great.
And,
I'm going to try to get
to a point where I can get some kind of a degree here that allows me to do it legally. But in the meantime, I'm not going to turn my back on people who actually want to do the right thing and want to help animals. And this young woman who's going to start being coached by me tomorrow, actually, I mean today, came to me at the 9-5 foie gras thing that we did, and she said, you know, I really want to be a vegetarian or a vegan, and I just have such a hard time. And I said, well, if you want, I can help you. And she told my card, took my card, and, you know, so wait, set on it. And she said, okay, I'll call you. And I'll pay you, and I'll, you know, if you need to, but I'll do it. I actually really want to do it. I see from talking to people that there is a sense that people really want to change. And, I mean, you always have the usual idiots who say, you know, foie gras is good or meat is good or, you know, the usual stuff. But you also have a lot of people who come to us. I mean, you when I take pictures of all those standards that we do, because I do every time, I'm like the official photographer for them now. I mean, so many people stop by. So many. We have huge crowds of people lining up just to sign petitions. Or just talk to us, or telling us, oh, we're so happy that you're here, that you're doing this. It's amazing. I never expected this in France, ever. I'm shocked by the openness and the interest that people actually demonstrate to about the animal issue and the idea that, you know, some things are really wrong and they need to change. And it's all the more difficult here that, for instance, one thing I learned yesterday by watching a documentary, which I actually posted on the World Peace Act page, the facilitator page, is from this documentary, they explained that French cuisine is recognized as a world heritage. And I thought, oh my God, are you serious? Because, you know, what is French cuisine if not a lot of meat and cheese and eggs and we see a lot of other things, but as a world heritage, which means that, you know, if you say you live in France, you know, people tell you, oh, you have this wonderful cuisine, and it makes it, you know, even harder to make any political changes about this. So that's why it's not even recognized.
Yeah.
Veganism is not even recognized as a healthy lifestyle at all by any authorities here.
Wow.
And then in America, you have the American Dietetics Association, who actually says that it is a healthy lifestyle for any age. Here, we don't even have that. It's not even recognized.
Right.
And we have this, even worse, we have this law, which I'm going to try to fight for, and I'm going to use a friend of mine, with an activist friend of mine who is studying law, and I'm going to try to fight it through the European Court to see if I can get it banned for the European Court of Human Rights, which is this law that forces kids to eat animal products in school, even if their parents are against it.
Wow.
And the worst thing is, not just that, it's something that I learned in the last few days, is that they are not only make it impossible for kids to eat whatever they want, but they also will go as far as taking the kids away from their parents if the parents impose, as they say, a vegan diet on their kids.
Right.
I mean, this is horrible.
To me, it's a total... Sure.
It's not only cruel to the animals, but it's a human rights violation, in my opinion.
Right.
And I've been thinking about this because I was aware of this law before I even left the country. I remember the talks about it at the last animal rights conference.
Yeah.
Belgian activists actually did a very good lecture on what's going on in France and in Belgium, particularly in France. And she told about everybody in the room about the law. And I remember people's faces just dropping when they heard that. And I knew
about it.
So I knew what to expect. And one of my goals ever since I came back is to find a way of fighting this law with this, what we call here a citizen action, which is not going through usual court, but doing like a citizen action where you do petition letters that you send to, I have to figure out where to send it in the European courts to pressure on the French government to stop this practice, to stop the law and recognize
that
for every other country,
we're gonna have to,
Germany
and
the UK,
we're gonna have to
recognize it as a healthy lifestyle.
Right. We're going to have to get to some other people, Veronica. I really appreciate you telling us all this, but we've only got like about 20 minutes left.
Oh, one more thing before I let you go. I want to thank you for supporting my GoFundMe fundraiser, by the way. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. It's great.
That's
right. Yeah, you're raising money for your displays, which I think is really helpful. And I wanted to mention, everybody, that you have a blog on veganism and a new one about veganism and inclusion. So it's great, the work you're doing online and that you're doing there in France. Thank you so much, Veronica, for calling us at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is in France right now. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to me.
Great to hear you. Right. All right. Talk to you later. Thank you
so much.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have Michael Lanfield. Do you want to join us for a few minutes? Michael, are you there?
Hi, Will. How are you?
Hello? Good. How are you? Yeah, great.
Great. I'm excellent, actually. And hello, everyone on the call. And I just have a few basic comments that you were saying about when you talk to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found out in the past so many years since I've been vegan that basically when I talk to someone, I do two things, and this is really like a big help. I always see myself in others, so I know that when I'm talking to someone else, it's not like I'm talking to them, I'm talking to myself. So I have to be patient with myself because I remember how I was for the first 26 years of my life, you know, eating animal products and not giving a damn and not even thinking about it. And I remember when my sister confronted me about vegetarianism in 2001 and 2002. I was living with her at the time, and she claimed to be vegetarian, but I think she was still eating fish or something. And she was talking to me about dairy and, you know, how we're not really, we're the only species on the planet that drinks dairy from or drinks milk from another species.
Right.
And I just, like, didn't want to even hear about it at the time. And I just told her that I like the taste, and, you know, leave me alone. And so I tried to see myself in others, and also because of that, seeing myself in others, I understand the other person, even if they're being whatever, if they're shouting at me or if they're just ignoring me or whatever they're doing or whatever is saying to me, I understand.
Yeah.
Because it was like me before for 26 years. Really good thing and what you said before is tell your story from your point of view, because nobody can argue your story. That's absolutely really true. I truly believe that nobody can argue. I mean, Cowspiracy was fantastic for telling, you know, Kip's story, and that was really, really unbelievable. And so that's what I usually do when I speak to people. Of course, there are times when people are, you know, when people get on the edge, and, you know, myself included, and I try not to. But when people push your buttons, and you just have to kind of try to calm yourself and cool, you know, make yourself
right.
You know. And so, last thing I just want to say, because I know there's a lot of people that probably want to say something, is that if any of you have not heard that I actually created. For the past 4 years, created and written a book, The Interconnectedness of Life. And it was very, very fantastic that Will had a chance to review it and critique it. And if you guys want to definitely take a look at that, I'm offering it for free as a free PDF or a paperback. And you can definitely check out the website at weareinterconnected.com. And again, once again, I want to thank everyone for doing what you're doing. And thank you, Will and Madeline, for what you're doing. And love you all.
All right, Michael. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us on the call, Michael. It's great
thank
to
you.
Hear from you. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to say a couple things real quick here before we go to the next person. Michael's book is called The Interconnectedness of Life, and weareinterconnected.com. I think the book is coming out officially in January, which is right around the corner, and it's definitely a book that I think has a lot of good stories and ideas in it for the vegan lifestyle and for people to hear. So thank you, Michael, for that. I also wanted to just say on a follow-up to what Veronique was talking about, just very briefly, that you know, she was talking about how she is not allowed to be a coach in France without having some kind of qualifications. You know, the United States is really kind of nice here. You can actually be a coach and make a good living as a coach. I have a friend he's a coach. He just went through the Marshall Rosenberg nonviolent communication training, and he's a coach, and you know, he makes a lot of money and very has lots of clients and everything, and doesn't need any, absolutely no certification. I mean, really doesn't need anything. He's, you know, he's just a coach, and he just advertises it and does it. And there is that option here in the United States, which I think is great for people who want to be a vegan coach. If you want to be a vegan coach and help people be healthy and whatever, you know, you can certainly, there's nothing stopping anybody from doing that. And you can take a class on how to market yourself and all that, but you can also learn those kinds of things other ways as well. So I think that's an important point to mention. Also, the whole thing that Veronica was talking about, that the children are not allowed in school to be vegan. You know, it's just against the law in France. And if you try to have kids that are vegan, government can take the kids away from you, and that kind of stuff still happening. And so again, we have to be very vigilant about, as vegans, the more we can prove on every level, the effectiveness and healthiness of a plant-based diet, of vegan living for ourselves and for future generations and so forth, the more of these kinds of things are just not going to be possible to happen. It's just not going to be possible. But it really takes all of us participating in whatever way we can to help do that. So anyway, I want to make those couple of points. And I would like to go ahead now and unmute the next person. I'm not sure who you are. 562 area code 212-5241. Hello. You're unmuted.
I will. It's Tara.
Oh, Tara. Hi, Tara. Great.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Yep.
Okay, good. Well, I want to talk about, well, first of all, it was really nice hearing from Michael and Veronique. Michael, I've already ordered my book. Thank
Great.
You.
Great.
Forward to receiving it. I want to tell a very quick story, and it's I'm paraphrasing, so I'm just going to get to the very core message of it. It's also a Buddhist story, and it's a Kuan Yin story that really was kind of a shining and a guiding light for the way I my behavior for a very, very long time. And I am glad to be reminded of it today. And the story is this, and it's full of extremes in the way that some Buddhist stories are, so I apologize for those. But in the very olden days, devoted followers, devotees, would travel every year and go on journeys from temple to temple. And they would be from all different traditions of Buddhism. And they would literally be on foot, and they would travel, and they would stay in the towns of the temples and bring their own food and all of that. And this one particular monastery, a group of very weary travelers arrived, and they saw this beautiful statue of Kuan Yin. And they had traveled for days and days to get there, and they were so thrilled to be at the home of Kuan Yin. And they arrived very late at night, so they weren't greeted. And they left offerings at the feet of Kuan Yin. And then they went off and found a place to sleep and stayed there. And their offering, because their tradition approved as such, was, wouldn't you know, raw meat. Funny we were talking about. So they left all these offerings of raw meat, the finest food, the only food they had, and it was the highest level of adoration that they could even imagine. And the monks awoke to find this and were so insulted that they thought, who has insulted Kuan Yin so terribly? And they found these devotees, and they threw rocks at them and sent them out of town. And of course, the devotees were devastated. Well, Kuan Yin, of course, this is a lila, some sort of a spiritual play, and Kuan Yin's watching all of this. And she apparently threw these monks into poverty and you know, inner thinking, and for something like 40 years. You know, they had to really think about what they'd done and pay penance, and this is where the extreme parts come in, and that's not my point at all. But the point is that the intention of the devotee was ignored completely, and the heartfelt reason for being there was really disturbed in them. And you know, I have to remind myself that everybody has a different training, a different upbringing,
right?
And
right.
If our first response is I have to change you to be like me, or, you know, even though we find it horrific, then we're really not doing either of us any sort of a service. And I often, these days, it's almost like a knee-jerk reaction when people say, you know, today I went out to lunch with all my coworkers, you know, and inside of me is this little person that just wants to say, oh, but can I help you with that? You know, I can show you how to not have do that, you know,
right.
And all they want is acceptance, and they already feel guilty because they know I'm a vegan, you know, so like you were saying earlier, sometimes I guess the best thing is acceptance and love and projecting love at them and just being who you are, and maybe some seeds are planted, and that's all.
Great. All right, thank you, Tara, so much. Is that it? That's it? You want to say something for now?
That's all.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much. Great to hear from you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Tara, as a lot of you know, helps us so much with the Circle of Compassion, the Prayer Circle for Animals, and behind the scenes with the internet and the web and so forth. And it's true, you know, there's that old saying, I think it's a lot of truth to it, that if we went through the same exact thing as someone who's doing something we don't like, we would probably be doing the same thing ourselves. If we were abused as they were, perhaps as a child or whatever, we don't know the whole story of people. So as Michael Landfield said very well, if we can see ourselves in others, that's a very profound, actually, the idea of seeing myself in others. And that's really what veganism, the core of veganism is in many ways, is that we as human beings naturally do that, actually. I mean, we are able to do, that's our natural intelligence. When we see someone suffering, whether it's a human being or a cow or a pig, it's not difficult for us as human beings to imagine ourselves being in that situation, the suffering we would be experiencing, and really wanting to help that person, that other being, that other person. And so this natural kindness and compassion is repressed in us, in our society. But I think as vegans, we think we've got it back, but very often I think we still have to continue to cultivate that more and more so that we do see ourselves in others. Okay, so we only have 5 minutes left. If anyone does have a short thing you'd like to say, it's *6. I do want to, there's a few things I really want to cover though before, in the short amount of time that we have, which is basically number one, that we have two kind of exciting things happening, in a few days, two releases. The, January 1st, is the release date of the book, Circles of Compassion, Connecting Issues of Justice. A lot of you, I think, are aware of that book, but anyway, I'm the editor of the book. I'm not the author. I wrote, an essay in the book and the introduction and the conclusion and pretty much marshaled all the different authors. There's about 30 authors, but I think it's a great book. It's all vegan authors, and it's really a book to help see the intersectionality of oppression, how injustice to animals leads in many ways to and is connected with injustice to each other, whether it's racism or sexism or heterosexism or classism or, you know, hunger and environmental devastation, all the different things really are rooted in our violence towards animals. So it's going to be it's available right now for pre-order on Amazon. There's actually a link there at the December 2014 resources if you'd like to have a look and order the book. And thank you. Quite a few people in the circle, I think, did support the book in the Indiegogo campaign, so thank you for that. And also the other good news is that January 1st is also the release date of our new guided meditation that I've been mentioning. It's called, the title of it is World Peace Meditations. It will be available on iTunes probably in about a couple of days, actually. I mean, I'm just now doing the final, what you have to go through to get it on iTunes. And then they're shipping the actual physical CDs to us, I think tomorrow. We'll get them in a few days. So I don't really have it up yet on the website or anything, but it is available as a CD. We're making it available to people for $10, and it's a CD. I think everybody's going to like it who's interested in spirituality and veganism. And I don't want to say a whole lot about it, but basically there's several sections. It's called Eightfold Path for Awakening Hearts. There's eight main meditations. The first one is Developing Intuition. The second one is Harmonious Relationships. The third one is World Peace. The fourth one is Animal Relations. The fifth one is Earth Healing. The sixth one is Radiant Health. The seventh one is Abundance. And the eighth one is Joy and Gratitude. I do the piano music background for it, and each one is in a different key for the seven chakras. And Madeline also accompanies with flute. And then we have also, after all that, we still have 20 minutes left. You can only have 75 minutes on a CD, and we have 75 minutes exactly. We have 22 minutes of World Peace Diet quotations also, which a lot of people like to have that for meditation or for yoga. So anyway, that's coming out. It'll be available in just a few days. and we'll just let people know, because I think a lot of people have asked about how we can work internally, how we can do affirmative prayer or meditation, how we can purify our mind. And I think these meditations, they kind of came to me a few years ago, 2 years ago, actually. I first started writing them on a retreat. I was up on Mount San Jacinto above Palm Springs in this beautiful place, and they just came to me. And so it took a while to get them all finished and packaged and the accompaniment, but it's finally finished. So that's coming out. I wanted to mention a few other things that are on, just briefly draw your attention to them, the resources from the World Peace Diet Circle for December. Also, there's a new video of me responding to the question, is eating dairy compatible with yoga? So this is a good video, I think, if you want to just understand or share with people more about the abuse of dairy and how spirituality and animal abuse do not go together. There's also Mike Schwager's Enrichment Hour. I gave a lecture there, and one of our people who is actually on Lily's Sunday night group set this up. And Mike Schwager, this may turn into a, for me, actually, and Judy's comments probably going to be involved in this perhaps also. But anyway, it's every week a radio show on that I'll maybe start in February. I'll keep you posted on that. And then Melvin has a new intuitive cooking video up, festive zucchini strudel. Gypsy Wolf, who's one of our longtime facilitators, her new book has just been released. It's called Turning Point in Compassion. And a number of people have essays in there. A lot of really well-known animal rights activists from around the world have essays in there. I also have an essay. Also, Beth Redwood, one of our facilitators, has an essay in there. I think it's really an excellent, looks like an excellent book. It's available on Amazon, and I highly recommend that book. One of our facilitators, Silva, has a vegan six-week vegan Kickstart program that she's started, which is, I think, terrific. We've got links to the grinders and the waterless cooking saucepans that Madeline uses. Also, Sandra Higgins, who is a facilitator now, has her, she has a sanctuary for animals in Ireland. Really interesting, doing great work in Ireland. I don't know if you heard about it, but there's a bull named Benji who was gay in England, who, because he was gay, he was bred to be a bull, just a bull, and impregnate females, and so they were going to send him off to slaughter. And somehow people in England just get behind the idea that we should save this gay bull. So Sandra Higgins, our good facilitator in Ireland, has Benji living on her sanctuary in Ireland. I think it's great. And, also Veronique's got an excellent called The Vegan Communicator, her regular blog. Richard Oppenlander, who's a colleague who's in Cowspiracy, a great guy, he's got an excellent article on how animal agriculture is the source, the fundamental source of drought and water depletion and deforestation, not only in California but worldwide. It's really, I think, a good summary of the main issues. A great short video on Jesus being a vegan. I would love to talk more about this. I'm reading a book right now, given to me actually by both these facilitators, John, Christine, in Victoria, British Columbia, called The Origins of Christianity, which I think is an excellent book by Charles Faklevic, who is a big, thick book, and he's a good scholar. I really think, when you go into this in depth, you realize that Pythagoras brought this teaching of compassion for animals, also of non-slave owning, also of pacifism, of non-cooperation with war, and also of not taking oaths, and also of communal living, of not owning property, of living together communally. And there were many Pythagorean communities that were in, that were plant-based. And out of this, apparently, before Jesus was born, I mean, he was 500 B.C., the Essenes and another group called the Therapeutae and then another group called the Nazarenes. And it's a lot of evidence really that comes from the people writing at that time or shortly after that, that Jesus was born into these communities, that he was really a vegan activist. I think it's really interesting whole other discussion about this. But anyway, you know, Jewish. It was a very Jewish, vegan Jewish tradition of pacifism, of communal living, of veganism, of radical inclusion of all beings, and of challenging the authorities, challenging the teachings of war and violence and so forth, so and how that whole message of kindness towards animals, of pacifism, of non-slave owning, and of communal living, how that was completely suppressed gradually by what emerged as the Catholic Church, and how Jesus' teachings were completely lost and perverted. It's really very interesting. Anyway, there's also another new film that's just coming out called Pure Plant Pure Nation, which is made by some of the same people that made Forks Over Knives. So this should be another, I think, very well done movie that could help, again, move people toward a plant-based diet. It's nothing to do with animals, I don't think, compassion, but at least to really, again, hammer home the idea that, like Veronique was talking about in France, people think your kids are going to die if you don't have a meat and dairy, and it's absolutely not true. I wanted to draw your attention to this book, With the Eyes of Love, by Christa Blank. She is very much a kindred spirit in Germany. Some other excellent articles. Alan Savory, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but his, you know, he did this TED talk that got a huge following, and talking about how cattle grazing is going to save the environment. There's a very good critique by George Monbiot, who's well known. This new burger that bleeds like meat, I mean, this is quite interesting, making vegan foods that really even meat eaters, you know, wouldn't know the difference. Why Canadians are ditching dairy, I mentioned that earlier. Quite a lot of other very interesting. It's just great when you see this, you see the huge range of actions that are happening, of discoveries that are, conversations that are happening and discoveries that are being made. And in fact, I was just interviewed also. I came out here to our house and interviewed me a couple of days ago for another new movie that's going to be coming out called Harmony. It looks like it's going to be a great movie. It's made by people in the Netherlands and also here in the United States about veganism, and especially specifically about meat analogs, you know, meats that are so delicious, that are plant-based, and how there's no need anymore to kill animals and so forth. Also, this one article, The Real Reason Wheat is Toxic, It's Not the Gluten. You know, this huge thing about gluten and all that, and it's really interesting to understand now. I know I have to kind of wrap up here, but just quickly, the wheat farmers in the United States, and also now more and more in Europe, even though wheat is not genetically engineered and nobody is spraying wheat with Roundup or anything typically, but now it's standard procedure apparently now with wheat, since the fields don't typically, all the plants don't ripen at exactly the same time, right before they just want to harvest the field, they'll just douse the entire field with Roundup, glyphosate, which is so toxic. And then what that does is it just, the plants just panic. And the ones that are all ready to be harvested, it doesn't do a whole lot to them. I mean, it just coats them. But the ones that are still a little bit green, it just freaks them out, these poor plants, and they just basically release their seeds. You know, they just, in their dying gasp of life, they release their seeds. So then the farmers can come in, and it just saves them a few dollars. They get a little bit more. They get a better. They make more money with their crop yield by spraying everything with glyphosate, with Roundup. So people are eating all this glyphosate, and that's, according to this article, maybe one of the primary reasons why everybody is getting so sick from eating wheat. It's got nothing to do with the gluten. It's really got to do with the glyphosate that they're spraying on the field. So again, reason number 999: eat organic. Very important besides eating vegan, eating organic. And, I love this little, on the next page, mice are not killed. This whole thing, people have been talking about how, oh, you vegans, you know, you're killing all these, mice in the fields with the grain combines. And, apparently, One researcher in Oregon had that theory, and everybody's been using it ever since to make vegans think that, you know, they're responsible for killing all these mice in the fields with the grain combines, and apparently. So anyway, it's great to see that somebody actually tracked this research down and completely debunked the whole thing. I mean, mice are incredibly perceptive, and you know, they're able to get out of the way of owls and foxes and ferrets. They can certainly get out of the way of these gigantic lumbering harvest combines. I mean, they're not killing little animals. It's ridiculous. Maybe a few, but if they are, of course, most of this grain is for animals anyway. But anyway, that's been completely debunked. So closing with this nice picture of a cow saying, "A vegan hurt your feelings? A vegan saved my life." I think it's always good to remember that. So, gosh, we're really past the time. I apologize for going over. And I guess we'll just close here with, I wanted to close with this short meditation. This is from the last part of the healing meditation for the Eightfold Path of Opening Hearts. Before I do that, though, I just want to say, I mean, there's so many more things I would like to have touched on if possible, but just send my love to all of you. I want to remind everybody about the World Peace Diet Sunday gathering that Lily Macy facilitates on Sundays. They had the very last meeting. I mean, they read through the entire book. It took from October of 2013 all the way through to a couple of days ago, last Sunday, in December of 2014. So in other words, basically almost 13 and a half months. And read the book carefully and went through it, and it was just wonderful to see. I was actually, Mel and I were both on that call, and it was really wonderful to hear the stories of people's transformations and insights, and hear them reading poems and things that were inspired by the whole transformation that they had, and how they had not only health improvements, but relationship improvements, and just being part, living a more meaningful life. So that is going to be, I made note of it on the tour schedule. But if you go to WorldPeaceDiet.com, you can see that they will be starting up on January 4th again. She's going to start again at the beginning of chapter one, or the preface, actually, the World Peace Diet, and again, read as a group through the book together. It's a very empowering, I think, experience to just go through and discuss and contemplate the teachings together in a group week after week, every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific. So that will start up again on January 4th. And so thank you so much, Lily, and everyone who helps make that possible. I also want to acknowledge Mark Stroud, who's, again, doing so much great work in Cincinnati. And we're just so delighted that Mark and everybody in Cincinnati continues on with the work that they're doing. I'd love to hear more from you, but I wasn't able to. And also Madeline and I just interviewed with Marlene Narrow. Mark and Marlene and Lily are all on this call, I think. But anyway, Marlene has now started. She's a World Peace Diet facilitator also for a few years. And she has now just started her own radio show called Vegan Nation. And she interviewed us for that taped interview, and it's going to be aired in early January, one with me and then a following week, I think, with Madeline. So, again, it's great to see you all getting this vegan message out into the world. Finally, I do want to also mention that we're leaving in a few days, I mean, January 1st, for almost 3-month tour all over the southern United States, and then we're going to Hawaii. So if you live anywhere in the South or you know people in the South, look at our tour schedule, and please make connections for people if they would like to come and hear a lecture. Or we're doing workshops, we're doing concerts as well. All right, so now here's the closing meditation. This is from the very end of the animal relation meditation, which actually I said some of it on Sunday at Lily's event, and now I didn't say this part, though. This is something different. This is the end of it. I send my heartfelt love and blessings to all animals of this earth. and apologize for my transgressions against them. I apologize for humanity's ongoing transgressions against them. I thank them for their patience, forgiveness, and loving kindness, and vow to ever more fully live a life of kindness, tenderness, mercy, and compassion toward all living beings, even the most weak and vulnerable, and to refrain from eating, wearing, or using them in any way, and to do my best to help others also to live with kindness and mercy. I bless and salute our fellow passengers on this earth and send them all my deepest love and appreciation. I realize that as I awaken to the truth that I am, I see that no animal is ever dangerous or harmful to me or anyone. All are unique and beautiful expressions of the loving source of all life, contributing their roles in the precious and ongoing unfoldment of life here on this amazing planet we call our Earth. I give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Okay, well, bless you all. Thanks again for joining us on this call, the third Thursday call, and for the World Peace Diet. Please do stay in touch. In the meantime, Madeline and I join together sending you our love. We look forward to the next call, which will be on January 15th. We will be in San Antonio, Texas on our tour, and we will see you all in our mind's eye and perhaps hear your voices. You are in our hearts. Much love to you all. Thanks again for joining us. Go forth and have a beautiful month. I wish you all the best in bringing the vegan message to our world. Thanks again for joining us.